Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 480, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallish. I'm joined today by Kyle Kenyon from ProTech Guy. Welcome to the show, Kyle.
Hey, Jeff, how's it going? I appreciate you having me on here.
It's going awesome, and I am excited to talk to you about your business and actually what you do. But before we get started with that, let's go ahead and tell a little bit about yourself and your backstory of how you got started in computer repair.
So yeah, I think I got a pretty good story. I've been into it for quite a while. I grew up down the Cape, and my dad was an electrician, but he was an entrepreneur himself, and he ran his own electrical company for himself. And he had an old Mac that I would always want to touch. He probably paid something crazy, like $3,000, like back in the day. But today's standards, it would be nothing. But it was always locked. I couldn't touch it, but I was always watching that cursor go around and do the trails with the cursor. And I was probably, 8, 9, 10, somewhere around there when he had this. And finally, he let me get into it and actually use like Paint and word processor and stuff like that. And so we always had a computer, and I was always taught to really not be afraid to break it. I remember one time my brother and I did break the computer, and we paid a ridiculous amount of money, according to my parents, to get it fixed back in the day. So my dad will always tell the story that he wanted us to learn to fix computers, so we didn't really have to pay for it again. So I've always been kind of just, you know, like not forced into it, but like I was kind of always just the opportunity was always there. I had the tools to learn very early. And I probably built my first computer when I was like 13, I'd say.
Okay.
And it was a fun experience. And like after that, I knew that that's what I wanted to do. And I'd say that's kind of how I got into it.
Okay. So let's move forward a little bit. Now, obviously, you get to a point where you want to start your own business.
Right, right. So I, like I said before, I grew up on the Cape, so it's not very active unless it's like the summer season. I mean, there's people that live there year round, of course, but it's very dull in the winter. So I wanted to get off Cape. I moved to the Boston area. I got a computer job at a place that basically does house calls. And did house calls. I was like a 1099 employee. I just contracted. I could get a decent amount of jobs, but nothing was ever guaranteed. I didn't work like a 9 to 5. It was just call you, go to this place and fix it. So they charged their customers their money. They paid me my money, and then that was it. So I learned a lot from working in that field. And then I always had this underlying like little back burner business type of thing that was just helping out friends, family members, people that would tell other people that, you know, hey, Kyle's really good with computers, blah blah blah, let's have him take a look at it, something like that. So I always was kind of had this little pro tech guy style thing that really wasn't official until I'd say probably about 8 years ago now. But I was doing that at the place that where was the contract work. And I actually broke my arm, and it was kind of, I just stopped getting calls from them because they knew I couldn't do anything. It was, of course, with my right hand, so I was pretty slow covering that. So it was like, there's my mouse hand, right?
It's right. Like,
it was, so I kind of just fell out of that. They just stopped calling me, and that was kind of the end of that. And I was like, well, I got to do something. So I started stepping up things in my little side business, and but knew it wasn't something at the time that I could really settle on at that point. I needed a full-time job. So I got a job at one of the big box stores, not the big yellow one. It's a smaller chain, I guess, compared to that. And I learned a lot there, too. And I really appreciate having the job there. It was a lot of the stereotypes that go into that did happen there, but it's not really it was the position I was in. I was pretty young. I was probably 20, 23-ish at that time. So it was, I learned a lot from there and actually started to really dislike the business because it was just so much. It was just punch in and punch out. Nobody cared about the customer. So then I kind of moved on to working at a repair depot where that ended up just being numbers. And I said, I got to do this for myself. I really enjoy the customer service connection. I like talking to people. I like seeing people go from a bad computer experience to being happy and satisfied that their computer is repaired. They can get back to doing what they're doing, whether it's going on Facebook or running their business. I like that kind of that chase from getting them from upset to happy and having them, tell everybody and write a nice review and things like that. So that's what got me into doing it, was just wanted to make something better.
Well, that's awesome. A lot of times I think that's where a lot of people start off, is they start off maybe working for somebody else or even learning on their own and say, you know what, I can do this better than so-and-so, or I can do it not even better necessarily, but I can do it my way.
Right, right. I agree. Yeah.
And that's awesome, because we all have a way that we want to do our business. And it really should be, in my opinion, customer focused oriented, right? Because in this day and age, man, it seems like customer service has just really, really went down the tubes. And yeah, it's kind of sad.
When it comes to the consumer side of things, I'm very focused on customer service and the experience. I mean, I think there's a lot of options these days for different things, whether it's what you want to eat for lunch or where you want to buy your next TV. So a lot of it comes down to experience and what the customer experiences from going into the store to leaving the store. And if they have an issue with something, what that, how they handle that issue is a huge thing. There's no perfect product out there that never has an issue, but I think a good test of how a company works is how they handle those issues when they do come up.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So now you decided I'm going to go in for business, into business for yourself. Now, yeah. Where did the name Pro Tech Guy come from? Because, obviously a lot of people will take their name and put it with their business or something like that. But you already started from the beginning, it seems like, and you wanted to be a pro, not just a normal Joe, but a pro.
Right. I think I wanted to make it easy for customers to kind of know what I do, or at least get the gist of what I do, and not have it just be like Kenyon Computers or something like that, or Framingham Computers or something. So I wanted it to be something that people could relate to. It kind of had a catchy name. And honestly, I was just sitting in my home office one day and I was like, I want it to be professional. I want it to have tech in it. And oh my God. So let's say Pro Tech Guy. And I checked if the domain was available and I was like, it's available. Let's do it. So I bought the domain and it just kind of went from there. I wish I had a cooler story, but it was just kind of something that just popped in my head. Everything kind of lined up and I just went for it.
No, I mean, that's a perfect story, because just learning from, I think back to when I actually got my domain, and one of the things I looked at, well, number one, I looked at my state to see if the name was registered or not. And quite honestly, when I came up with the name TechNut, a lot of people will say, hey, you were on PodNuts. Did that have anything to do with that? And quite honestly, no, it didn't. I was just like, I was talking to my wife one day and she said, well, you are nuts about tech. And I'm like, hey, tech nut. there you go. Yeah. Now I've had some people who've had comments about the name. I'm like, whatever. To me, same thing. I wanted a catchy name that was easy to type in. I didn't want anything difficult. So I'm looking at yours in Pro Tech Guy.
Yeah. Easy
to spell, right?
Easy to spell. You don't have to screw up my name. It doesn't have to be a long URL. So I didn't want to have like something like Kenyon Computing or something like that. Just wanted to be quick, easy, people to type in. And I just figured it had a little ring to it and got to the point.
There you go.
Yeah.
So now, what types of things did you start off doing in your business?
So I started out just doing residential. You know, virus removals, crack screens were always super popular and still are for the, you know, virus removals and things like that. But it was just kind of word of mouth referral. And it was, you know, just basic, you know, reinstalls, things like that. That's pretty much where I started. And it's funny when I look back now on how I did things originally, like even before ProTech Guy became a thing, it's like, wow, I'm glad I changed my practices and learned a lot of things over the years, because it's like the things that I, not necessarily just like kind of refined my recommendations and practices really. But it's just funny to look back and see how I started to where I'm at now. And but yeah, I do both residential and business now. But originally it was just residential, word of mouth, friend of a friend of a friend of a friend, and you know, that's right. Kind of how it went down.
Well, I think a lot of people start off that way, and I always tell people, everybody's always asking, how do you get into business? And quite honestly, I tell them, you know what, you start off with residential. Eventually you'll bump into somebody that says, hey, I own a business, or my dad owns a business, or my sister owns a business. Would you be able to take a look at such and such a thing?
Yeah.
And you go in there and it's like, oh, you do a great job for them. They tell, obviously they know other business owners because that's the way business owners roll. And they'll tell somebody else, hey, this guy takes care of my tech work, or this gal, and go ahead and check them out.
Exactly. I mean, that's literally how it happened with me. It was just a basic hard drive replacement. This person did another person's website, and they referred me as a tech guy. And to this day, they're one of my biggest retainer clients that I have. And it's just crazy that there was no advertising. There's no Google AdSense, Facebook ads, nothing that went into that. It was just word of mouth, happy customer that had a good experience that translated into one of the biggest clients I have.
Right. Yeah. That's good. And I think you can go on from that. So once you have those up front, I think a lot of times you can move on from that point, and you can actually, at that point, you can start to solicit other businesses, and you've got some referrals. Hey, I do IT work for such and such a company.
Sure.
And they're very happy with my services. If you ever need anything, you know, give me a call. You know, maybe they've got somebody that's doing something for them, or maybe not. Or a lot of times what happens in this business is people disappear.
Yeah, that's the one. I mean, it's amazing that the stories that you run into, or the situations that you're kind of thrown into. It's like, you're telling me another person, you paid them how much money, and they did what? And it's just, it's amazing some of the things that you run into, especially in businesses, that they tell you how much that they paid for the last guy, and now he's nowhere to be found. It's
right.
Incredible. But
and then we feel bad about what we're charging. It's like, stop feeling bad, people. Just charge what you're worth.
Yep. I am with you 100%. I actually have two cats. I had to take one of them to the vet in an emergency. He was freaking out. I got charged $150. I was there probably 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, there was nothing you could have told me. It was six times the price. I still would have paid for it, but it wasn't. It just doesn't matter. It's just like, so other people get these rates. I think a lot of people in IT, I'm just not sure if we don't get appreciated like the plumber or the electrician. It's like, you know, I think you've even used the analogy before. If a plumber comes over your house and replaces your toilet or something like that, he's not leaving till he gets his toilet money, you know?
And
there's no bargaining. There's no, will you take, you know, we take $100 for that job.
Right. Exactly.
So
even if they don't do anything for you, if they step in my house and diagnose my problem, they're going to go, hey, that'll be $150, please.
Yeah. Yeah.
It took you 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's what it costs.
It's,
you know, okay.
Right.
So virus removals, crack screens. Now you're going into business a little bit, and you know, obviously doing things with network and all that kind of stuff. And what are any other things that you branched out into?
I like to do a little bit of like some small scale social media. I'll make people some Facebook pages. I find that there's a lot of people like, you know, some of the business clients that I work for, they don't know how to set up a Facebook page. They don't know how to set up an Instagram, or they don't know how to, update their website or something like that. So I'll do a little bit of website, Facebook work, things like that. Set up some banner images for them. Nothing crazy. I'm no graphic artist or, you know, social media expert, but it's something I like to do. And, I'll usually set people up sometimes on, like Squarespace or something, just so they can edit it and keep it easy going for them. And, you know, they don't have to call me every time to do a small edit, just because I'm not a website guy. So I don't really want to, do that full time. But, you know, a lot of these people, I'll tell them up front, like, hey, if you guys want something that you can just jump in, throw a blog post up or throw an image, I got a good platform for you, and we can get everything set up and get the ball rolling. And a lot of these people have a younger guy in the office or something that is more than happy to take that and run with it and keep things going for the website. So, most of my clients are business clients are smaller seat clients, like 10 or less. I don't really get into servers too much or anything like that. It's pretty much if they need anything, I usually deploy a Synology NAS. But most of the time, they're either using a cloud solution for like a QuickBooks or something like that, or they're just file sharing on a NAS.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's good. So, and you like the Synology?
I love Synology. I'm a big proponent of I like to learn the system before I start recommending it to anybody. So I said to myself a couple years ago now that I said, you know what, I've heard a lot of good things about Synology. I'm going to buy one, set it up in my office, and just learn everything, learn the operating system of it and the interface and all that stuff, figure out how it works, and then I'll feel comfortable recommending it. And I honestly just fell in love with them. I think they work great. They're relatively inexpensive solutions for what people want to do. They can do a lot of stuff. You can buy them for as little as $250. You can spend thousands of dollars on them if you want. It's just, you know, there's a lot of different options for people. And I think it's a good solution for, you know, a smaller seat client that just needs the file share, just needs a local backup. And then they can cloud backup from there.
Okay. Yeah. And do you ever still get into situations where clients will have a workstation that they're using as a quote unquote server?
One of my retainer clients actually had somebody set everything up for a brand new office, and they deployed a quote unquote QuickBooks server, which was a Dell Inspiron desktop or Inspiron desktop, and it was just it had a bootleg version of I think it was Server 2012. So the all the crack files were right there on the desktop. It was definitely not a server, of course. And to have a QuickBooks server, you had to remote into the server with remote desktop and open QuickBooks on the server. Oh. So it was just people, you know, you'd have, person at desk one remote in. Oh, I need to remote in. So they'd have to log out, and I got to remote in at desk two. So it was obviously not how QuickBooks server is supposed to work, or how if you want to have a remote situation like that in the cloud or something like that. So it was all kinds of messed up. I actually told the client about that. He had the company come back, take back all the brand new computers, and I deployed the whole new office. So it was a big win for me. I was obviously very excited for that. But it was just one of those situations, like, it's amazing that one, this is recommended, two, like the bootlegging of the software is crazy to me, but it's funny that you run into these situations.
Yeah. It seems like everybody is always trying to get that cheapest solution. And I'm like, cheap is not always free, because you're going to pay for it eventually.
You can't have everything. You can't have cheap, fast, and free, you know, or cheap, fast, and reliable, I should say, but it's, you know, you get one or the other. You can't, if you want good product, you got to pay for it. And it's not always, just because somebody said it works doesn't mean it's either good for the client, good for you, or it's actually true. I mean, you got to vet I think you got to vet things for yourself, look at reviews, look at unbiased reviews, and then see what other people in the community say. I think we got a good community here on Podnuts and Facebook, and I think a lot of good recommendations can come out of there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of the problem too is sometimes that we will sell things to our clients because maybe that's all we know. And maybe a client mm-hmm. doesn't really need a full-fledged server, but because that's either what was already there, we kind of go, you know what, I'm just going to go with more of the same.
Right.
Instead of really trying to hone that solution to what they need now. Maybe they did need a server 6 years ago.
Yeah.
But maybe they're you know, the way they're doing things has changed slightly. Maybe they don't actually need that full-fledged server.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. It's, you got to keep your knowledge base up so you have the best things that you can present to your clients. And if things change over, let's say, 6 years and they don't need that server anymore, that's your job to step in as a consultant or as their IT guy and say, hey, this just isn't the best way to do it. If it's in the budget, let's move towards, you know, this best practice way to get this done. It's, you know, I usually pitch it as it's something that they're going to make a lot more money implementing X idea than it actually costs. You know, you buy a Synology NAS for, you know, a few $100 and that's going to get everything backed up and everyone sharing. Then, I mean, think of all those files that are being shared to then do their business. It's something that to get the thing done right, instead of spending hours and hours troubleshooting that 6-year-old quote unquote server that is sitting over in the corner that no one's ever cleaned out, you know?
Oh my. Now with the Synology NAS, is there one that you would recommend for somebody to test out in their own environment?
I say if you want to just test it out, get a, you know, Synology 2 series, which is like a 216, I think is the latest generation right now. So a DS216. I started out with a Synology DS212, which was the last number is kind of like the generation. So this is probably 4 years old now. It was cheap. It holds two drives, which I put Western Digital Reds in there. Haven't had any problems with it. I don't hammer on the thing. I really just have it as kind of a place where I can learn if, you know, there's updates and things like that, and to test out new things. But, you know, it backs up any of my machines. I share files, you know, just around the office and things for that. So it's good. It's a two bay, and it's, you know, it's not the fastest processor. It's not going to do any of your, you know, media solutions like Plex and things like that. But it's a good starter if you want to learn it. I think even now that we're talking about that, anything that you want to learn, if you've never touched a Mac before, go buy a cheap Mac. Go buy, you know, a MacBook Air that's a couple generations old, or a Mac Mini or something like that, and just learn Macs. I mean, I don't think anything really beats hands-on experience. You're not going to read it in a book. You're not going to watch a video about it that's going to teach you everything. It's just get your hands dirty with it. And that's honestly how I learned Macs, and that's how I learned Synology.
That's good. Now, yeah. Some of the things you can, and I know it's probably a little bit of a rabbit trail, but some of the things that you can do with Synology, and the reason I'm asking these questions is because I absolutely don't know.
Oh, yeah. You gotta get one.
So, and I've thought about it, and I'm moving towards that. It's on my list. Yep. And hopefully that this year, I have so many different backups, but I need to get some sort of, you know, basically network attached storage is what NAS stands for. And yep. Get that on my network so that I can back up my system here. Right now I have, with my production machine, I've got to have, in order to do an image with something like a Carbonite, now I do images with Acronis, but with Carbonite, I have to have a 5 terabyte drive is what it recommends for all the stuff that I have to make a complete image of my system.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at, you know, some of these other things. Hey, you know, if I'm doing a backup, obviously automated is good. So a Synology NAS will do backups of the file structure. Does it do any imaging or anything like that? Or can you set it up to do that?
You know, right now, most, or actually all the clients that I have that have a Synology are just doing a file-based backup.
Okay.
In all honesty, I need to develop, I need to learn and implement the solution that will do automated imaging backup. And that, I mean, that could be, you know, Acronis on each machine, then throwing the backups to the Synology NAS or something like that. But Synology will do file-based backups to the best of my knowledge. You know, maybe somebody out there knows a way to implement that, but I haven't done it yet.
That, and I just thought, yeah, because I use Acronis on my machine, but I used to have an internal drive that I would back up to. Well, that's all fine and dandy, but for anybody that knows anything about spinning drives, when you have several drives plugged in your system, it's fine. But just understand that if one of those drives starts to get quirky, it will basically throw your whole system off.
Yeah.
And you won't even know why. You'll be like, oh, wait a minute, what? This thing's taking forever to boot up. What's going on? Why is this? And you check the drives out, and sure enough, you get down to that drive that's just got the backup files on it. But because Windows has got to recognize it when it boots up, it's still part of the system. And if it's having a problem, it'll mess everything up. So I wanted to pull that stuff out of my main system. And now I just use external drives for all that.
Right, right. Yeah. It's external drives. I mean, they've gotten pretty quick. I mean, not like as fast, but it's fast enough. I think I have a Mac desktop here that I run a Thunderbolt enclosure that's got a bunch of drives in it. And it's fast. USB 3 is fast. It's, there's a lot of options these days, and it's, you know, for backups, it's cheap enough just to stick go buy a 1-2 terabyte Western Digital USB 3 and start throwing some stuff on there. And just so you have a backup and it's, you got it there and just in case you need it.
Yeah, I actually had to, I moved to a 5 terabyte Western Digital Black from my 2 terabyte drive. Because I was running out of room. And, I have always had this rule where I only want to be like a couple generations behind. So right now, well, probably 2016, I would have said your sweet spot is right around 2 terabytes where I felt safe using that type of spinning drive.
Yep.
And so for me to go up to a 5 terabyte drive, I'm like, I don't know, man, the failure rate might just, shoot out the roof. I'm not sure, but I'm going to try it anyways. And so I did. And it, quite honestly, it's faster than the old Western Digital Black 2 terabyte drive. It's got more cache on it. It's got double the cache, actually. And it seems to work fine.
So. Yeah. I love Western Digital drives, Hitachi. I think we're going to get to a point where we're, 5, 6, and then I think they got like 8 terabyte drives now too. So it's like, those are kind of on the bleeding edge, but I think eventually we're going to get to a point where those are going to be the kind of refined mass market drives. Like it's almost hard to find a drive that's less than a terabyte now. It's like, they don't even really sell them anymore. So I think just a couple years from now, it's going to be like, you're only going to be able to get a 2 terabyte or a 3 terabyte. And it's just, they're going to start refining those larger terabyte drives. Like you said, the 5 terabyte, you might be taking a little bit of a risk here, but you're, adopting that now because that's what you need. You need 5 terabytes. You need 5 terabytes. And, I think the biggest drive I have is a 4 terabyte in that Thunderbolt array. So it's nothing crazy in there. But, you never think you're going to need more storage, and you always do.
Yeah, absolutely. And quite honestly, between you and me, I don't want to let anybody else know, but that 5 terabyte drive was on a really, really good sale.
So, yeah.
So instead of buying the 6 terabyte, actually the 6 terabyte and the 4 terabyte were more than the 5 terabyte was. So I said, And I don't know why, and who knows. But again, for anybody that knows me, everybody knows I replace my spinning drives once a year, regardless if there's anything wrong with it or not. It's just what I do.
I think people have barked back at that a little bit, but it's cheap enough.
Absolutely.
It's cheap way to kind of prevent issues. I don't know if you clone or fresh install to the new drive, but I mean, you're going to be on, get the latest hard drive with the latest technologies, and the chances of your hard drive dying is just diminished considerably.
Yeah. The other thing too, so my SSD is going to carry my OS, and it has a few of my main folders, like my documents and stuff like that, I keep on that drive. But when you're talking about pictures, videos, and all my other external stuff, I actually take those and I point those to the secondary data drive. So really, here's another dirty secret, is I used to do, you know, I used to do a fresh install like every 6 months back in the day.
Yeah.
Now I'm lucky if I do it like once every 3 or 4 years. Usually when I build a system is when I do a fresh install.
Yeah. I feel like I used to do them a lot more like in the like Windows 98, Windows XP days.
Oh, all
I
the
feel
time.
Like I always had to do them and it was like, oh, wow, that's what the computer used to feel like.
But yes.
I feel like nowadays it's really not as noticeable, and that's probably because, you know, we're running solid state drives now. You know, Windows 10 is a little more refined in some areas like this, and it just doesn't, I don't think it gets as gunked up as like XP yes. did or Windows 98 did, and we have to use all these cleaning tools and all this other junk on there. So yeah, I think it's, I feel like I used to do them, yeah, like once a year.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, Windows is so smart nowadays that it really does. If you're running it the way you're supposed to be running it and you're not doing nefarious things on it,
yeah,
it'll just run and it'll kind of self-heal. It really does self-heal.
Yep.
I don't really have any issues.
No. And even if you run into an issue where you need to clean things up or do something, I mean, you have your, I'm not a huge defrag fan, but there's a built-in defrag that's set to automatic unless you change it with a spinning drive. And there's, you know, Windows cleanup tool that's going to clean up any like temp files and things like that. And yeah, there might be an occasional situation where you got to throw a C cleaner at it or something like that. But for the most part, I feel like all these tools that are out there that are, you know, I've seen, you know, hundreds of customers' computers that, you know, I got speed booster, driver booster, this, that, and the other thing. And it just amazes me. And I try to have that conversation that, you know, hey, you're running Windows 10 now. Just let it do its thing. And the thing is, some of these people kind of got into computers in the days like we're talking about, like the XP days, where you might have wanted to use a tool like that and it's to clean things up. But, and you know, because they're not going to, you know, they're going to go buy the tool for $39 at, you know, big box store and use that versus they're not going to wipe out their computer when they, you know, back in the XP days or whatever. They're just, so they kind of, I feel like everyone's kind of carrying that thought process over to this, and when you don't really need it. I just had a computer the other day that had 3 cleanup tools on it, that like paid cleanup tools. And I just basically sat the customer down. I said, you just don't need these anymore. I mean, if you don't want to remove them, that's up to you. But it's, I mean, this stuff is definitely not helping you. It's hurting you. And everything's starting up in the you know,
right,
the boot process of the computer.
You know what's funny? I don't even give them a choice. I remove it and I go, listen, I'm the expert. You're not. And so I'm telling you, this stuff is doing, and I tell my customers, listen, if it has the word speed or fast or something along those lines, it ain't.
Exactly. I kind of relate this to, you know, drive by a pizza joint that says, you know, best pizza or fast pizza or something. I'm like, it's not that. It's usually the places that are called great pizza or best pizza are not the best pizza in town.
Right.
It's a little mom and pop shop that's, you know, called whatever they call it. And it's these hidden gem things like that, that's good for the food stuff. But it's like, it's never, if it's too good to be true, it usually is. And if you're downloading some even worse free tool that says it's going to boost your speed, you're going to have a bad time, I think.
Well, what a lot of people don't understand is, again, it's one of those things where free is not always free. And here's the thing. You download this free tool, they have to monetize it. How do I monetize it? Oh, wait, I can gather information. I can put ads in your browser, et cetera, and all this stuff. And this is how I make my micro payments of money in order to sustain my business. And so we don't understand that we might get away with one of those programs running in the background. But now you add 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, these are all phoning home and communicating back and forth. And now you're like, why is my computer so slow?
This is why these 6 programs.
Exactly.
Yeah. So. And I think some of the times they even run into, you know, got these registry cleaners and things like that. And it's, I mean, then you're ripping things out of the system that might be there. They cause issues. They wonder why the computer doesn't start anymore. And it's, you know, you summed it up pretty well. It's just, I think nowadays with Windows 10, it's really not needed. I mean, I'm not saying everyone's on Windows 10, but I mean,
they should
Windows
be.
7, I don't think is that bad. But yeah, I agree. I mean, everyone that can be on Windows 10, unless there's some specific little niche software that you're running that can't run. And those are still out there for business clients and things like that. But for the person that, you know, your everyday Joe Schmo sitting at home with the computer can easily do Windows 10. You know, of course, we've seen our issues with the automatic update thing, but think of the issues that we used to have that the computer didn't update at all. I mean, that just opens a whole can of worms for it. So I understand there's problems with Windows 10 that, you know, we're going to iron out over the years, but I think we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I hear a lot of whining, and I'll call it that because it is whining. A lot of people are complaining about different things with the Windows updates. Oh my gosh, I'm going to be forced to put on Windows updates. Well, in most cases, unless you have this niche software, you should have to have, again, we put these computers out on the internet. They're not updated properly, and they are in infestation onto the internet. We're the problem.
Yep.
And so Microsoft is just kind of forcing everybody's hand to go, yeah, we know this is going to be a little painful, but we're going to make sure that everything is patched the way we think it should be, to the best of our knowledge, for that time, to protect you from these stupid zero-day things that come out that they might have caught way before it actually starts to hit the pavement for the regular people on the internet.
It's just tough love from Microsoft. It's just the way, you know, they're looking out for the best interest. They're not trying to screw up your computer. They're trying to prevent things from happening that they're seeing before we are. We can't monitor everything to the caliber that they can. So they're patching these things, deploying the patches, and with the millions and millions of computers out there, yeah, there's going to be some issues. And I think that's just the way it is. You know, there's nothing that's perfect out there. And I mean, Windows 10 is still, you know, it's still fairly new compared to, I mean, Windows 7 was around for a long time.
Sure.
I mean, sure, we've done a lot of patching on Windows 7, and patches still come up for Windows 7.
Absolutely.
You know, we're going to get to that point where I think Windows 10 is a clean, well-operating OS that is, you know, it's going to become the new standard.
You know, the funny thing is, and I've said this from day one, since I've had Windows 98 on up, with modern PCs anyways, I've always said this. I'm like, listen, if you have the right hardware matched up to the operating system, I never had a problem with any of the operating systems, including Vista, ever.
Yeah.
It ran all my games. It did everything I wanted it to do. I never had any slowdowns. It ran perfectly fine for me. But again, when people are cheap and are trying to buy cheap hardware to put with an operating system, it unfortunately was written to actually access a little bit more than, you know, 1 gig of RAM in a Celeron process. It's like, come on, people, get real.
Yeah. I mean, in all honesty, when Windows XP came out, I had my first computer built on Windows 98. And when Windows XP came out, I said, oh, no way, I don't want any of this. I'm like, this is Windows 98 is pretty much the only, like, you know, I was old enough to actually like understand a computer, put it together and how it works. And it was kind of my, you know, it was my baby at the time. And I was like, oh, I'm staying this way. I don't need any of this XP junk. So, but now, I mean, it's a lot different now. I adopted Windows 10 as soon as I could, and, you know, I'm a little more open now. But I mean, Windows, I didn't really have much personal experience. Like, I didn't use Windows Vista very much. I kind of just stuck with XP. And I mean, I dealt with plenty of client systems that had Windows Vista on them, but it's...
Oh, you were one of those, Kyle. I get
it. I did. I mean, but Windows ME, I mean, oh.
Okay, I played the fifth on that one. Yeah, I forgot about ME. No, I didn't mess with ME at all. So, you learn a lot of, I miss the days when I had to rewrite drivers to work video cards and all that kind of stuff. I mean, come on, that was Windows 98 was wonderful for that.
Oh, yeah, it was own set of challenges, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, just think of how far we've come now. It's like, you know, you can, I mean, it's just so different from, I mean, you think of all the problems that you would have had with a Windows 98 computer, and people complain about the problems they have with, oh, geez, these updates are automatic now with Windows 10. Oh, geez. It's like, you know.
Yeah, stop your whining, people. That's what I say. So now what types of tools and things do you use in your business, software or otherwise?
So I use, for business clients, I use an RMM Ninja. So I've liked that. I kind of, I actually think I heard about it from you guys on the show when they first started kind of going around, and I tried it. I was kind of a little fed up with my old RMM, and it was just time for a change. And I liked the interface. It was easy to work with.
Yeah.
It just worked. And the biggest thing for me was the Windows Update Management worked. Cause I'll vet updates for business clients. And especially those that are running it, not so much now, but Windows 7, you know, I'll just make sure the updates are good and okay them, okay any updates that go out to those systems. But it's, I'll use that for my business clients. I'll use Kabuto for residential, and whether or not they become a managed client or not, I'll usually deploy that on any system that goes out, just because it's an easy way for them to contact me. It's an easy way for me to kind of have that little digital relationship with them if they need anything in the future. And then, you know, I can get notified if they got something going on with their computer that keeps coming up. I could say, hey, you know, that, you know, it sounds like, you know, Internet Explorer keeps crashing. Is that something you're having an issue with? Da, da, da. Or they can get the pop-up and notify me. So Kabuto works well for that.
Now, let me ask you on that. Are you getting any pushback from anybody as far as leaving something installed on their system, or pretty much your customers don't really care?
No, they really don't care. I've definitely haven't gotten any pushbacks. And
okay.
Honestly, I don't even think I've had anyone uninstall it either. Like, cause, you know, some people might not want to confront me about it. They're just going to get rid of it.
Sure.
But most people like it. And those that are on like a managed MCSoft setup, then they got to keep it. And that, you know, that's fine with them. But most people look at it as an easy way. It's like, ooh, you got your own little program. Cool. Like,
right.
And then they can just contact me. I have their information. And then even better, it, you know, creates an asset in Repair Shopper. So it's just all, everything really works well together with these things I kind of use to run the business. And I think Repair Shopper is great. I love using that. I was using FreshBooks before that. And once I switched over, I actually switched over not this last Black Friday deals, but the previous one. And it was a big expense compared to what I was paying for FreshBooks. And I said to myself, and this is kind of what I do for most things when I'm making a business decision or, you know, trying a new tool. If this is going to hurt me financially to go in this direction and spend this money, then I really shouldn't be in this business. If I can't afford $50 a month to run my business with a Repair Shopper that's going to get me all kinds of crazy features or whatever it is, if it's Ninja or Kabuto, if I can't afford that, then it's, you know, I got another problem to worry about, really. And now right. That's when I went into this year that I ended up paying, you know, the regular price for it and everything. So and I said, it's worked. It's so much better than using like just a standard, like FreshBooks is basically, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's basically just a online invoicing platform,
right?
You know,
and it's probably a good place sometimes for people to get started with something like that. But yeah, Repair Shopper is your, as close as I can find, it is your one stop shop for everything that you need to keep track of.
Yep. So I think that the ticketing thing has really changed my approach to everything. It's just the flow of it. It works for me. Estimates. I hear people, you know, they're worrying about the customers don't want to pay. You've already accepted and signed an estimate from me. You're getting an estimate up front, whether how loose or accurate or refined it is, it's, you're going to get an estimate from me. I'm not going to come around and double the estimate without letting you know. But if you've got a virus removal, you know how much it's going to cost once it comes back to you. So I think that Repair Shopper really offers a great communication with the client through the ticket. You can have the, you know, the estimate go out and of course in turn invoice. So I think it works out really well, and it's a, like you said, it's a good all-in-one solution.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I like a lot of my, you know, my customers, number one, if you need your computer fixed, that's why you're coming to me. So right. Really, does it matter what it costs? No, there's going to be a minimum, and you're either going to pay me a diagnostic fee minimum, or it's going to be a flat rate for various services, or we might have to add a little bit more to that. And then I give you a call and go, hey, you want to do this or no?
Yeah, exactly. I'm pretty straightforward with it. Just like that. I do collect a $50 diagnostic fee, as I call it, which is credited towards the final repair.
Right.
I find that is really has weeded out any of the tire kickers, really.
Absolutely.
And it gets people serious that they're not going to skip an appointment. They're not going to, leave you high and dry. And, you know, then it helps with cash flow too. It helps you, you know, because you're going to have to buy parts or pull parts off of your inventory and whatever it may be. It just helps keep things going. And then you take that $50 deposit off the bill, and they're happy. And I think it really helps for many reasons.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah. All right. So what other types of, now, as far as virus removals and stuff like that, what are you using?
So I'm pretty much, I'll use, pretty much like JRT, ADW Cleaner, MC Soft Emergency Kit, Malwarebytes. I'm not sure if I'm super excited about version 3 of Malwarebytes yet, but I got to learn it more. I got to let it kind of grow, just like anything else. Just like we're talking about Windows 10. I'm not going to, you know, knock it, you know, at this point. It's an early software, or early. It's a big change from what Malwarebytes. I think they're trying to do an all-in-one solution. So, I mean, but that's good for them. I think they're a great company. But so I'm using that. That's probably my main staples of cleanup. I'm sure I'm missing something in the moment here, but
well, speaking of, how about documentation? Do you actually document this stuff so you can know what you're doing from step to step?
I'm now, especially with now that I have Repair Shopper, if I'm working on a system, I'm updating in like a hidden note, at least, just every little thing that I do. And if I feel that I need to save the logs or something from one of these, I'll drop it in the ticket too and attach it, and keeping everything going like that. And as far as like documenting like clients for like maintenance clients for passwords and everything, I'll keep all their type of stuff, just all in one location. So if they need it or I need it, we have it all right there. And I'm not asking for, you know, let's log in, or do you remember this password that you set up, or even worse, I set up and I don't remember the password. I never really want that situation. And so I think I could refine my documentation a little bit better. I just actually purchased, now I'm slipping the name, but it's somebody out there selling basically like a documentation PDF thing that
Is it Informed IT?
Yeah. So
Matt Rainey's
I just dropped a couple bucks on that and haven't implemented it yet, but it's a nice way to keep you all the things
right
in this, you know, all different forms are already set up and stuff. So
yeah, it's great tools to have. Again, we're so scattered sometimes that it's hard for us to keep up with everything that we need to keep up with. So if there's already a list that's out there that we can just look at and go, yep, I checked that box. Yep, I checked that box. Yep, here's this information. It just makes it easier. They always say, get it out of your mind and get it on the paper. Well, this is a perfect way to do that.
Yeah, it's just, I don't want another thing to worry about. I just want to fill it out and get to it, or just put it, like I have, these procedures in place that, so I'm not thinking about how to do it in the moment. I'm focused on the computer repair, not the documentation side. So I already got my, typing it in on the ticket here, or uploading the log, or putting the password in the document for that client. So instead of, you set these these procedures up in place, you get those down, and then you can just focus on the repairs. You don't have to worry about, oh, where's that, you know, running around and finding that file, where to put this. It's just, once you have a nice clean flow, it makes things go so much better.
Yeah. And I think that that's always a moving target. And I think it's something that we can always improve on and become a little bit better at, you know, documenting certain things that will help us be more expedient in our business. I know one of the things I still am tempted sometimes, I'm grabbing a computer and I know I need to log it in, and I'm still tempted sometimes to whip that laptop open and turn it on to see what's going on.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I have to stop and go, nope, I'm gonna put the information in first, get all that stuff in there, then I will go into the repair. It's hard because you want to get it done.
Yeah, yeah. I'm the same way. It's very tempting to just jump right into it. I am super curious about things, and even to the point where, like, if a client tells me there's something going on, especially like business clients and retainers, it's like I want to be there right now and fix the problem, but it's not realistic. It's, you know, Saturday night or something like that, or it's you know, Friday night at, you know, 8 o'clock, and it's like I have this like this just curiosity just to be like, I wonder what's going on. And then like start to think about it. And I'm like, nope, you gotta just, you know, you're open your hours. You gotta do it during these times. And unless it's obviously an emergency from a, you know, a retainer client and something, it's not happening. I'm not going out at, you know, midnight on a Saturday to fix, you know, somebody's cracked screen or something like that.
I don't know, probably for $300 an hour, I would.
Yeah, everything's for sale for the right price, right?
Yeah. Yeah, if you're doing that for straight time, you're stupid.
Oh, yeah, I put a thing in my, so I mean, like you said, I mean, I would definitely do it for the right price. And that's why I put a thing in my phone system. If you call after hours and you want to be pushed through, then you're agreeing to double my rate, basically.
Right.
So,
exactly.
And then that just weeds out people who aren't serious, and they're, you know, just like the deposit thing. I feel like if people, you know, I've done emergency jobs, people need that document that's due tomorrow for their, you know, college class or something. They have to get it back, or they have to get their computer working so they can finish it.
And right,
there's those people out there. But for the most part, it's once they settle down and you talk about the situation that, you know, just shut the computer off. We'll revisit it tomorrow and go from there.
Yeah, you know my rule of thumb. There are no real emergencies most of the time.
Exactly. It is really, and I feel like that's something I need to get a little bit better with, because I'm a one-man show right now. And I have trouble when I go on vacations and things like that, that I'm like, well, and I try to think of it and reason with myself and calm myself down, that what's the worst thing that's going to happen? The QuickBooks doesn't work? Okay, well, start writing things down on paper, and your worst case scenario, you know, next week we'll get everything back up and running. It's not, I mean, it stinks, but it's not like the building's on fire.
Right. It's not like the end of the world. You didn't lose all your data. You're good.
Right.
Even if you did, hey, we'll restore that when I get back.
Exactly. That's backups. As long as I feel like I have my things in place, then it's, and if I've, you know, I've been able to come into that client, and just, you know, obviously there's plenty of businesses out there that I don't do IT work for that could call and have a quote unquote emergency, but it's, you know, my clients are backed up redundantly, and it's, you know, okay, we'll just pull the stuff down from the cloud. Even if the building was on fire, okay, we're going to have to get some new computers. It stinks. Hope everyone's okay. The stuff's in the cloud. You know, it's just, you know, I'm not a miracle worker. I can't make the files come back, and I can't put files that aren't there. And data recovery becomes expensive, but it's kind of, it is what it is type of thing.
Yeah. It's kind of our mentality too. We're by nature being in this business, we want to help. And sometimes we almost emulate other people's anxieties, emotions. Yep. And it's like, and so I've had to, this is my opinion, you kind of have to separate yourself from.
Sure.
Your customers, as far as the emotional, you know, it's just data. As long as I've done my job and everything's there, I'm not worried about it. And I kind of feel bad for a lot of people that go on vacation and can't really go on vacation.
Yep.
They're
yep.
like, they're half there and they're half out. And it's yep. like, what? what's the point? You might as well, you could have stayed home and saved yourself a boatload of money because your wife or kids or whatever, they're going to be like, well, okay, you know, dad or mom's not here, I guess.
All right. It's a lousy situation to put yourself in and then put other people in. So it's, you gotta, I mean, it's something that people need to work out, obviously, and they'll learn over time, but I've definitely become a lot better with the hours that I'm running the business and separating things. And hopefully when I move into a new office that I'm not working out, I mean, I work out of a home office right now. So it's, I always found it very difficult, and I always have worked out of a home office. I find it difficult to separate, just basically work and regular non-work life. So it's, you always want to go, hey, let me go check on that computer, see how that removal's going or see how that reinstall's going. And it's, you know, if you're open 9 to 5, you're open 9 to 5, not 9 to midnight. But it's one of those things, being an entrepreneur, and I'm sure you understand, it's a difficult thing to disconnect from. And it's something I think we just learn over time, and the more experience we have in it, the better we get at it.
Actually, it's really not that difficult at all. I'm going to teach everybody a lesson right now. Here's what all you got to do is say no. That's all you got to do is just tell yourself no.
Yeah. See, well, so let me, so what do we, like, I don't know how long you've been doing your computer repair business, but how do I, if I'm somebody that is, you know, I've only been doing this for about, I'd say very seriously full time is about 6 years. And it's a lot, it's not a short amount of time, but it's not, I mean, a lot of people have done it a lot longer than I have. So how do you, for someone like me who wants to grow the business, sometimes you don't want to say no because you want to grow the business, you want to get that customer, you want to make the sale, and you just, you don't want to say no for have them. And then the guy up the street says yes.
So here's the thing. So I would always entertain, I guess, a customer for whatever it is they need. And maybe it's only a one-off. A lot of things start off as a one-off fix, and then they'll move on from there. But here's the thing. If I already have a bad vibe and it doesn't look like we're going to have that type of relationship. In other words, I feel like this customer is going to suck the life out of me. Then maybe, and I say this loosely, maybe I might do it for a short period of time, but at some point I'm going to go, if you're not doing the things that I want to implement into this business or whatever, then I need to go.
Right.
And you can go to that guy that's cheaper up the street or whatever. It doesn't matter to me. But I'm not saying that I would never give something a go, because maybe first impressions aren't always what they're supposed to be. But a lot of times I tell people all the time, just go with your gut. If it seems like it's going to be a time suck, it's probably going to be a time suck. So
there's some people out there that just, I mean, it's happened to me. It just, you can't please everybody. And sometimes it's either their expectations have been set by somebody else and they're just too high, or you just don't really get along with maybe that type of person, or it's just something that just, you don't have that connection. And I've definitely said no plenty of times to people that want certain expectations to be met that I just can't meet them. And I'm not going to say yes to then let them down and not be able to meet those expectations. I've had, you know, office setups that I've just said, no, I can't do it that way. This is the way we got to do it. It's not, you know, and so I think saying no is fine if I get that vibe, but it's, you know, if I have somebody that I, you know, I, in all honesty, I'll maybe answer an email and say, hey, you know, I appreciate you emailing us. Let's, when's a good time to give you a call tomorrow to talk about this? And, you know, just to let them know that you're there for them, especially if they're a retainer client or something like that, or even if it's a new customer that you feel like you want to grab. Sometimes I'll answer an email, and I don't know if maybe I need to get away from that. And I'm sure the longer I do the business, that I'll learn to kind of step away at like 100% from stuff like that. Or maybe you're going to tell me that, yeah, that's a good idea, and you can answer emails at 8 o'clock at night if you want, you know.
Well, it's like anything else, you know, even though because I do my business part time, so I'm in a little different boat, but
right.
doing it, you know, having a full time job, if a customer contacts me, I will still at some point during that 24-hour period, I will contact them back either via a phone call if I need to, or just an email following up saying, hey, I'm going to take care of this. I get customers that are, I tell them, hey, leave your computer on. And I'll get to it. So I'm not saying that I never work past normal hours, but I only do it if I go, okay, I'm sitting here doing something else. I can remote into this computer and I can work on it while I'm, you know, catching up on Arrow or Flash or whatever. Those types of things. So if I can do that, then I'll definitely do that because it works for my customers because they're while I'm working 9 to 5, they're normally either at home or they're working 9 to 5 somewhere. So it's just easier for those types of situations.
Sure. But
I guess the difference for me would be is if I'm going on vacation, I laugh at people all the time that go, oh, I need an RMM app for my phone. Really? Do you? Come here. Let me smack you upside the head. No, you really don't. Because, you know, number one, if you really need to remote in that bed, number one, carry a laptop.
Yep.
And number two, you shouldn't have a laptop or a phone other than for communication with your family while you're on vacation.
Right. It's not, I think that just like anything else, if something happens when I'm on a vacation, I'm going to send an email that says that any of my retainer clients know that I'm away. I give them plenty of notice to if they have anything that's pending, they haven't said that, you know, we're going to come in the next couple of weeks and take care of that type of stuff, or we can wait till I come back. But, you know, if it's a true emergency, then, you know, I can have people really go there and check right. something out. You know, if the internet's down and you don't know how to reset it, or if it's a reset problem, of course, if it's a Comcast or, you know, Fios issue, then Comcast or Fios is going to be the one to come out there. But for the most part, it's, you know, I've never had an emergency that's like, oh, gotta fly home and fix this. It's
right.
just never going to happen. It's usually okay. Well, we'll take a look at it when we get back, you know, use the other computer. And a lot of the clients that I have an extra computer available to, you know, if they need to run over to that, you know, if their computer breaks or something, then, you know, go over there, jump into, you know, web-based mail client and pull your stuff down from the, you know, that's a good benefit of having a NAS. You know, they can really just work anywhere.
Right.
So.
And I think a lot of those people, you have to almost look at your customers as single entities. You know, I mean, you talk about you've been doing this business full time for 6 years. And I'm going to tell you, as a business owner, that's a long time, believe it or not.
Yeah.
It's a very long time. Now, I've been working on computers, modern computers, I say, since 99. My business has only been official 2010 is when I started my LLC.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've been doing this for a while, but what I see from a lot of people is they bend over backwards a lot of times. And here's the thing. If you're working with a customer that you don't care to work with, let's say you started off with this customer and you just see that now all of a sudden you see they're very needy. There's a lot of problems. Here's the one thing I can tell you. Money will solve certain problems. And so you either raise your rates for that customer make it palatable enough to where you go, hey, for $200 an hour, you can shame me all day long and I'll just take it.
I've dealt with a very similar situation when I first started out. That was just, There was a price that was going to make me tough it out, I guess, so to speak.
Right.
And then there was the price that I'm doing it for now. And we ended up just parting ways, and it wasn't necessarily a yelling match. It was, I wrote a very professional letter to them, gave it to them, and that was it. Gave them a 30 days notice. And it was just, and I'll tell you right now, from the point of that relationship to now, I'm 10 times better health, mentally, business-wise. Yes. It is, if you have a client that's bothering you that much, I'm not even sure if there's a price tag that can keep it. And I think that I'm happier that I didn't take, that I didn't offer the price increase, I guess I should say.
Okay.
And it's just that I'm out of it. It's yep. just, it, maybe things would be different now. You know, it's, you know, what is it? Probably 4 years ago this happened. So it's, maybe things would be different now, but it's just the, you know, the expectations were, you know, maybe I set them too high. Maybe somebody else told them and set the expectation too high, but it's just, I couldn't do what they wanted to do for the price that they wanted to do it with the equipment that they wanted to use.
Right.
Just wasn't going to work out for me. I said, forget it. And now that time suck that I had with that, working late hours, doing things, driving to this place once a week, has been replaced with more lucrative clients that appreciate the work
exactly.
that we do. Exactly. You know?
And here's the thing. There's plenty of them. A lot of people think this industry is so scarce. And I'm here to tell you, there's more people than you can deal with on a daily basis. Yep. You just got to go out there and you're going to find them over time as long as you keep at it. But the problem is everybody seems to want a magic bullet. You know, let me put my advertising out here. Let me do this. And all these things are good. None of them are bad. Mm-hmm. But the problem is people just, that's what they're looking for. Let me sprinkle some pixie dust here and we're all just going to float away to magic land.
Yep.
And it's like, no, it does take work. And a lot of times that work is time also. It takes time. So
I look at it like I got to plant a bunch of seeds.
Yes.
Some of them are going to grow. Some of them are not. And, you know, there's other computer guys in my area that probably do a good job. There's some that don't do a good job.
Right.
But it's the ones that don't do a good job are going to get weeded out. The ones that do a good job are going to get those customers that, you know, they have a good relationship with, you know, they kind of hit it off. And I'm going to get the customers that I hit it off with.
Exactly.
And there's plenty of work for everybody. I hate when people say competition.
Right.
I think it's just, it's hard to find somebody without an electronic internet connected device these days. So at some point they're going to have an issue or it's going to break or they need a new one or they know somebody that needs a new one. And it is so much out there and it's only going to get busier, I think.
Absolutely. I agree with you. Yeah. You're actually one of the ones that I like to hear from because a lot of people, there's a lot of naysayers out there and they're like, oh the computer, yeah. PC repair is dead.
Oh,
okay.
Geez.
It's like, really?
Yeah, I guess I'm, what am I doing then?
Exactly. It's like,
I think like people say desktops are dead. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm on a desktop right now.
Exactly.
And I don't want anything but it. I got 2 27-inch IPS displays. I am in computer heaven right now.
There you go.
And there's other people out there. There's other people that need a desktop. I mean, I just don't think that your graphic artist that is designing your website or designing Coca-Cola's, you know, advertisements and things like that wants to sit on a 12-inch MacBook. So
And I'm going to tell you a practical application. My wife lives on her phone. Okay. Yeah. She'll get on Facebook. She'll watch little videos on there. But guess what? When she goes to do any type of shopping on Amazon or any other website, what does she do? She comes in my office on my bench computer with a 28-inch monitor. She's got a laptop sitting right in her room. But she comes over to 28-inch monitor, pops on that baby, and that's where she does her shopping because yeah. you can see the screen. You can see what's going on. It's like it's easy to point and click. When you're doing things on a phone, it is not always that easy, or even a tablet. And let's not even get into printing. Printing sucks on those devices.
Yep.
Oh.
It's funny. You pretty much described my wife's computing habits too. She has a MacBook Air. She has a phone. She's always, you know, doing her little Instagram and Facebook stuff
yep.
on there. But she got to do anything serious. It goes up to the desktop. That's, you know, just our, you know, we have a Windows system that I use for doing like some podcasting that I used to do. And it's a good little system to have. And she's always defaulting to that. And I said, that's coming with me to the new office. And she, she said, oh no, that's got to stay here. I said, that's what you have that MacBook for, right?
But. Somebody's going to be buying a new computer, and I'm not going to say who it is, but I think his name's Kyle.
Yeah.
I guess with, we've kind of gone over a lot of things here. What's maybe a lasting business tip that you could give to people that we haven't maybe talked about yet before we end the show off?
I would say, go a little high level here, but it's the biggest thing to me, and I think we touched on this a little bit in the beginning, the biggest thing to me is the relationships that you build with your customers. And it's now, however you build that relationship, whether it's on the phone, via email, via the conversation you have when they're picking up or dropping off their computer, or it's Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, whatever it is, how you're building that relationship and how you want to define that relationship. It's the biggest thing these days, because there's plenty of computer repair places that they can get their computers fixed, and you want to be their destination, their computer guy that they tell, oh yeah, Kyle's my computer guy, or oh yeah, Jeff's my computer guy.
Right.
I think focusing on these relationships and not focusing on selling, that it's going to help grow your business, and you're going to eventually get those sales back. So whether it's email marketing, or throwing up YouTube videos to help people out, or it's, you know, Instagramming pictures of some of the jobs that you do that people can relate to. I think building that relationship, answering those questions, being there when people need you for help, I think that's what's going to drive the business. And that's how I'm trying to do it. And if I'm successful in it, I guess you heard it here on Podnuts, but it's the biggest thing that I wake up every day and I feel like this is something that I want to do because I love doing it. And I love building those relationships and transforming something that is a bad experience to a good experience.
Absolutely. Great, great sentiment there. And I'll tell you, from a standpoint of, think about it like this, because a lot of times we look at this word selling, and there are those types of businesses out there that they sell, and that's what they do. And what Kyle's talking about is creating that relationship. If you think about a person, think about your mother, your father, mother-in-law, father-in-law, whatever it might be, a brother, sister, a family member, an uncle, an aunt, something along those lines. What would you do if you said, what would you do with those people if you said, you know what, I want to help you to the best of my ability, and I want you to have this, this, and this, and these things that I put in place here are going to protect you, and here's what it's going to cost you.
Yep.
And I think a lot of times if people would just take it from that standpoint, in what types of things would you want to do for your own family member or friends? You can do that for your customers too, because again, it's a win-win situation. You're helping them by being the expert in telling them exactly how they need to protect themselves. Yes, it's going to cost money. You're going to get paid to do it, but they're protected and they have a much better computing experience versus just leaving it out there and open for whatever happens. And then coming to you and going, it's broken.
Exactly. It is. I never sell, or I don't like, I guess the word sell or sale is not really the best thing. I have solutions that I can provide.
There you go.
And that costs money. So
absolutely.
And those solutions I've vetted, like we talked about, the tools that I use, the products that I've used, I've vetted those before I'm recommending. I'm not just saying it because I saw somebody, you know, make a YouTube video about it, or they saw a blog article about it. I've vetted it. I've put it through its paces. And now I feel like that whatever that is the best solution. And you can have that solution. I'm the one that is here to give you the solution and the plan to get done whatever you want to get done. And if you want to purchase that, then here it is. If not, then, you know, we move on. But I think you're saying treating everybody basically like how you would treat a family member is the best way to go at it, because I'm not going to tell my mom, my dad, my brother, my sister something that I don't want them to use, because I'm going to be the first one to hear it back.
Exactly. So, there you go. Well, Kyle, I really enjoyed chatting with you today, and this has been great hearing you. And I know you were doing a podcast for a while, so that's where I first heard of you and started checking out your podcast a while back. But It's been great. I know you've been in the different forums and, you know, on Facebook and in different things like that. So I've interacted with you a little bit there, but it's been great to get your backstory and understand where you're coming from and the types of things that you do in your business.
Yeah, this was, it was great to be on here. I definitely try to keep active on Facebook and the various groups and things like that. And hopefully we kick that podcast back on, in the next few weeks. This is definitely feels good to be back on the microphone, here on this show. So definitely some, inspiration.
Awesome. That's what we're here to do. So if people wanted to find out more about you, where would they go?
Well, if you want to check me out, it's protechguy.com. I have Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, YouTube. So any of those, Instagram, Snapchat, and YouTube is Kyle Protech Guy. Facebook is /Protech Guy. And if you want to shoot me an email, Kyle@protechguy.com. Be more than happy to dive into anything that we talked about on here or shoot you a link or answer any questions that you might have.
Awesome. Well, again, appreciate you coming out.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem. You guys can find me on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you'd like to be a guest on the show like Kyle was, just send an email to guest@podnuts.com. I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. And don't forget, if you need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNimble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. You too can help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping on Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.